This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Feeding America CEO Claire Babineaux-Fontenot. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Claire Babineaux-Fontenot next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Hunger and food insecurity are headlines seen around the world and are not immune to these United States. Feeding America is a national food bank across the U.S., and CEO Claire Babineaux-Fontenot says the situation is only getting worse.
Last year, they were at 13.5%. I want to put that in context for your listeners. That's higher than at any point during the pandemic. And that's among the highest rates of food insecurity since they started actually measuring food insecurity. The only time it's ever been higher was during the financial downturn. There are a lot of people out there, and they're struggling. And we are well positioned to be helpful, and I'm hoping that your audience will want to be a part of that.
What about food insecurity for children?
Another terrible, regrettable statistic that comes out inside of that data. About 13 million kids in this country are food insecure. And if you have a room that has a bunch of kids lined up, you're looking at for every 1 out of 6 kids are food insecure. 1 out of 6, 1 out of 5. It's just striking that's the case here. And as I've said before, and I know your audience is going to get tired of hearing me say this, is the good news in this is that we can do something about it, but there's an awful lot of challenging news there. So yes, children are very hard hit by hunger in this country, and the data show that continues to be true. Also inside of that data is people with higher and higher income levels are still finding themselves with them.
So what are the stereotypes that we assign that are common in people's minds of the hungry that do need to be broken? What do most people think, and what's the real story?
I like to start with myself so that people don't feel that I'm in this job wagging my finger at all of them, telling them, how dare you not know? There are things I didn't know. Like, I didn't realize that if you strip away children, the elderly, and people with disabilities, most people experiencing hunger have at least one job in that household. So there's a myth that most of the people receiving SNAP benefits or going to the charitable food system, that these are people who don't work. Oh, it's simply not true. These are people who are working. These are people who are working hard and still not making ends meet. People think food insecurity is one race. It's not. The largest plurality of people experiencing food insecurity in the country are white. And in fact, embedded in those food insecurity numbers from the USDA that I just referred to, a larger number of whites became food insecure, as reflected in that last survey. So yes, there are certain communities, it's absolutely true, that if you are a person of color in this country, you are more likely to be food insecure. But that doesn't mean that the only people who are food insecure are people of color. So if your audience can understand that the people that we are seeing line up in those lines, tens of millions of them, by the way, in 2020, 60 million, the last year, close to 50 million, I mean, tens of millions of people. These are not people who are so different than you or so different than me. And I think sometimes we characterize it that way because it gives us a little comfort. And we say, well, if I keep doing the right thing, I'll never find myself over there. The reality is there are people working hard and doing the right thing, and they still find themselves there. And that can be scary for people. And I think that's why some of the myths exist. And part of my responsibility is to make certain that when people think about someone experiencing hunger, they think, this is my neighbor. And they think about, how long might it take for me to be in one of those lines? If you indulge me, Jeff, like if you think about the pandemic, there's some terrible, terrible things that came along with COVID. Some of those things still are lingering with us. But one of the things that COVID did was it increased empathy for people experiencing hunger. Most people were forced to stay at home and just watch the television. And you're seeing those lines grow and grow and grow. The big issue we confront now, people were looking at those long lines and they thought, okay, I see those lines on the outsides of those buildings. That means a lot of people need help. I want to help people who need help. So they tried to help. My concern was that those lines would return to the inside the building and that when they did, people would think that they went away. And unfortunately, that has happened. They've gone back to the inside the building and many people assume, oh, so everybody must be doing okay. Not only is everybody not doing okay, but as I said before, with a food insecurity rate of 13.5%, more people are doing worse than they were during the peak of the pandemic. That's something that people need to understand.
So adding on to what you just shared, between 2021 and 2022, there were 10 million more food insecure. And in terms of children, there were 4 million more food insecure. So how do you identify need, real need, and for those who might play the system?
I know your audience has that question because I have that question. When we're distributing federal commodities, USDA foods, there are actual financial requirements, thresholds that you have to qualify under in order to receive. When someone receives SNAP benefits, there are financial requirements that you have to certify in order to receive. There are moments in time when people have a sudden shock, economic shock, and they turn to the charitable food system for help. There are times when, like 30% of the people who go to the charitable food system actually don't qualify for SNAP. They're who we would have historically referred to as the working class poor. It would be like my mom and my dad, you know, people who are working hard and still can't quite make ends meet some of the time. A lot of people who turn to the charitable food system fall into that category. But the vast majority of people who receive assistance from the Feeding America Network and the charitable food system, the vast majority of people who receive assistance through SNAP, who receive assistance through USDA foods, these are people who don't want to be in that line. They're not gaming anybody's system.
Then how has the economy and this inflationary cycle made it difficult not only on the people, but also on the food bank's ability to assist the people?
So although the rates of food insecurity are higher than they were during the pandemic, donations of food and funds are lower. So that means food banks are having to do the thing that they're horrified to do. One, sometimes they have to turn people away. Now, I've traveled all across this country. I've been with food bankers when they ran out of food before they ran out of line. And the people who sign up to do this kind of work do so because their heart tells them that they should. And it breaks their hearts to turn people away. The other thing that I've seen them doing is giving less. So most benefits that you receive from the government are based upon income needs and assets, right? Kind of makes sense. I don't think that should change. Makes perfect sense that it would be that way. But there's some weird math or bad math that keeps happening based upon the system that we have right now, which is you can wind up getting a $2 raise at work and lose money in our current system because the system is set up to perpetuate you relying on the government for those benefits because it doesn't create the space for you to actually get ahead.
So a question that I've commonly asked commodity organizations is the 2018 Farm Bill adequate to cover the needs of their risk management for the year ahead? Nutrition programs are a largest part of the Farm Bill spending, but are those programs, building off what you just said, are they adequate to meet the needs of the food insecure today? And if it's not, then what programs are most critical and what changes would you make?
No, they are not. And one of the programs that has a bit of a bad rep, but that is absolutely a critical lifeline, is SNAP. But it is one of the best administered programs in the U.S. probably. It does its job better than most. So we talked about a myth before. Let me talk about the myth here with SNAP, a myth with SNAP that the pandemic actually helped us to see. Meaning America, we touch tens of millions of people every year. Well, we're uniquely positioned to talk to the people who are coming to us and ask them. They said they want healthier options. Well, during the pandemic, some of the restrictions on SNAP were pulled back. So there are a lot of really, really tough restrictions that don't have anything to do with whether or not you actually qualify. But it's hard to get access. Elderly have difficulty. It sometimes requires technology. Not every application is on the same portal. You have to get access to the portal. You need internet in order to get it. There are lots of different hurdles that people have. During the pandemic, we relaxed some of those restrictions. And when we did, what we saw was people who had SNAP made healthier choices because they had more access. Good news is that we know that when we invest in SNAP, we invest in thriving communities. We know that that includes the person experiencing hunger, but it also includes the businesses, small, medium, and large business. If we actually systematize it more, have similar rules across every state, streamline some of those rules so that it's transparent, use computer technology so that you can figure out who's applying for what and whether or not they qualify. That way people will get access to their benefits faster. And it will also solve for whether or not somebody's trying to engage in fraud. So there are things we could do to make SNAP better for sure. We should do those things. And I think I said earlier, 30% of the people who are turning to the charitable food system don't qualify for SNAP. So SNAP is not accounting for working class poor people, people who have jobs, and on the surface it looks like, you know, yeah, technically you meet the minimum threshold. I mean, you're above the minimum threshold, but it's not accounting for the fact that you have to pay for child care, or that housing prices are at historic highs, or that food prices, especially for healthy, nutritious food, that inflation is really battering people. So we should go in and we should tweak it. We should make some common sense adjustments to the SNAP program. And we should make it more available for people who need it rather than put in place restrictions that put people who need it outside of its reach. So SNAP would definitely be one of them. On the other side of it is TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and that would be the federal commodities piece. We could do better and we need more. During the pandemic, that was the most, during trade mitigation during the Trump administration and pandemic relief during the Biden administration. Those are the two moments in time when people had access to the most nutritionally dense food from our very own U.S. farmers, growers, and producers. Again, I'm out there in the field, Jeff. I'm with little kids who are getting access to this nutritious food that they sometimes have never even seen before. I'm there with moms and dads. I'm there with grandmas and grandpas. And I'm with them when they're excited and they're engaging with this produce or this dairy or this protein that they can't afford. But the American farmer, grower, and producer makes that a reality for them. We should double down on that. We should work even more closely together to make that more true in the future rather than less true. So the farm bill, we need a great farm bill. We don't just need a farm bill. We need a great farm bill. And we need to make some common sense adjustments so that the people who need access to these foods get access to the foods that they need. And so that the systems support people not needing the system anymore.
Feeding America did a recent poll of voters, and it showed a lot of people are concerned about the price of food, but they're also concerned as well about hunger in America.
You know, I've always said I will bet on the Americans, the generosity and the brain power and the innovation of the American public every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And this data just confirms what I already knew in my bones would be true. We are a kind and generous nation. Although we are often shown images that defy such a thing, I know that we are a kind and generous nation. And this data shows that too, that 70% of likely voters say that the government ought to be doing more to actually address food insecurity in the country, that 82% of likely voters are concerned about high food prices because they're paying it themselves, you understand? And they're imagining, oh my goodness, what if I had less than I have? What if I were not as privileged as I am? What would that mean? How would I take care of my baby? What if it were my grandma who had to make a decision between getting access to prescription drugs that she might need, or paying the light bill, or eating? People, the American public is inherently generous and good, and that shows up in this data. 87% say they feel positively about food assistance that comes from food banks. So they're also smart, by the way, that I get to work with food banks all the time. And these are people, these are soldiers. They're out there rolling their sleeves up and defining what it means to be a neighbor inside of communities. It's food banks, but it's also food pantries, from the really big ones to the middle-sized ones to the little bitty church basement. I mean, these are spaces where people show up for each other in beautiful, beautiful ways. So the data that we have from likely voters says people have noticed that that's true. They also say what I've been saying, that Congress shouldn't be making it harder for people to get access to benefits. And let's put in some technology that makes it hard for you to defraud. But let's make it easier for people who need access to this food to get the access that they need. So I'm not at all surprised, honestly, by any of that data, but I'm happy that we have it. So it is not just my hunch. It's not just my personal experiences that I have. I've had all across the country. I think since the pandemic started, I've been to all 50 states. That includes Alaska and Hawaii. And I've also been to Puerto Rico. And I've found good people every single place that I've gone. And I've found people struggling with food insecurity every single place that I've gone to. And when those two get together, I mean, the results are clear and material and meaningful in the lives of tens of millions of people.
Some would argue against spending more money on nutrition programs. The only thing, though, more expensive than food is perhaps health care. What case can you make that better nutrition might actually save the government money?
Food is medicine. There's so much data that shows that people, like, if you solve for the core issue, you'll do better, right? Do upstream solutions. So when people experiencing hunger are far more likely to struggle with heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes, and we have work that we've done inside of our vast network where we've been able to engage in interventions, where we've made certain that people get access to more and more nutritionally dense food. They've had it available to them. They've had it accessible to them. So it's not only the type of food that people have access, that people get, but how easy is it for them to get access to the food that they need. We've done work all across the country, and we have data that show what I don't think your audience will be surprised about, which is when people eat more healthy food, they need less medical attention. It's been borne out. So if we can choose as a nation whether or not we want to keep on treating symptoms, or do we as a nation want to make certain that we're addressing what's underneath it, what's the core issue. But if we address the core issue of food insecurity, one of the most beautiful things about it is that everybody wins. Because what results is thriving communities. Everybody's community gets. And everybody wins. There are very few issues that you can get politicians to agree on. By the way, this is one they usually agree on. There's been bipartisan consensus around this type of assistance throughout the pandemic and even before. We as a nation need to compliment our members of Congress and tell them that's exactly what we expect from you. We don't expect you to make decisions that say, well, we've got a limited amount of money, but we're not going to address this core issue. We're going to spread the peanut butter around so that it's not impactful on anything. No, let's make sure we go to the core issue. There's nothing more core than hunger, right? There's nothing more core than hunger. And when you address hunger and you do it well, you solve all kinds of other issues.
Claire, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us here in this holiday season that's always busy for everyone to talk about the hunger issue in the nation. This is Open Mic, and Claire, today you have the last word.
Well, the last two words have to be thank you. Your audience is largely comprised of people for whom I have so much deep and abiding respect. Farmers, growers, ranchers, producers in this country. The lifeblood of this country. I grew up, I was a farm girl myself. Grew up in a small agricultural town. Used to be hailed as the sweet potato capital of the world, Opelousas, Louisiana. I was even married in a place called the Yambly Auditorium, was where my wedding reception was. That's how deep. I dug sweet potatoes, I picked cotton, I shucked corn. I learned the most valuable lessons of my life I learned by being a farm girl. So I have deep respect for what farmers do and for how they show up and how what they do impacts the people that I get to engage with all the time in this work. So thank you. Thank you so much. Let's stick with it. Let's stay together. Let's not allow these forces that want to separate us. Let's not let them win. Let's remind ourselves and the whole world what America really, truly is at its core.
Our thanks to Feeding America CEO Claire Babineau-Fontenot, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.